Does anybody really make New Year's resolutions anymore? Let's have a quick hand count. Have you made resolutions for 2021? Raise your hand. Let me see how many people have made resolutions. Okay, you're not. Okay, the recent poll that I saw said that 2 out of every 5 Americans have made New Year's resolutions. Okay, maybe they had black eyed peas as well. What does that really mean? Well, the word, you know, resolution means to have purpose or to be resolved, to be resolute, admirably purposeful. Okay. But a good working definition of New Year's resolutions would be wishes of fantasy on New Year's Eve that generally disappear by the 3rd week of January. Why is that? Why do resolutions seem to disappear so fast? What are the barriers? Well, it seems to me that there might be 4 barriers. The first one would be we really weren't all that serious about it in the first place. We said we'd like to see an outcome, but we weren't really willing to do the hard things needed in order to bring that and make it a reality. Second thing is we made the resolution, but we got into our routine and we got what? We got busy. We got distracted. There's a lot of other things going on. If we even bothered to write the resolution down, we don't know where that written resolution is now. It's in a drawer somewhere. We'll come across it a couple of years from now. We'll go, oh yeah, there. That's where it was. That's the reason I wasn't able to do that. The third thing would be, well, there's no consequence. When we make a covenant with ourselves and we don't follow through, there's really no punishment, is there? Who's going to know? It's not that big a deal. And of course, during these times, these pandemic times, there's a fourth factor, isn't it? Almost makes us fatalistic. COVID, the pandemic. Oh, you can make all the resolutions and set all the goals you want. That doesn't mean you're going to have any control over the outcome. And who wants to experience the pain and the sense of guilt and shame that comes with failing to make our resolutions become a reality? Consider the case of Robin Shaw. She's a young woman who went to New York City to be a comedian. She was successful in getting some comedy gigs. At the same time, she had her day job. You got to do that to pay the bills. And when she began, this time last year, she began 2020, she had 3 resolutions. Her first one was that she was going to make more money. She needed to make more money. What really happened? Well, she lost her job in March, and all of the comedy clubs got canceled. Her second one was travel more. She spent the last 10 months sequestered in her tiny Manhattan apartment. The third one, sadly, was spend more time with her grandparents. And they both passed away from COVID. And so, sadly, and perhaps fatalistically, understandably so, her resolution for 2021 is just one: survive. We all feel that way, don't we? And so I thought it might be helpful to turn to a church leader, a person who experienced much adversity, much persecution, much suffering, beatings, imprisonment, in the name of serving Christ, the person who called him in the first place, the Apostle Paul. Hear this reading from his letter to the Philippians, chapter 4, verses 8 through 14. Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. Rejoice in the Lord greatly, that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned for me, but had no opportunity to show it. Not that I am referring to being in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little, and I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well-fed and of going hungry, of having plenty and of being in need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. In any case, it was kind of you to share my distress. May the Lord bless the reading of this word. What is the context of Philippians? Well, it's a letter, an epistle, that Paul wrote to the church that he founded. Philippi was really a retirement community for a retired Roman military. You know, that the habit of the Romans, one of the incentives they gave to people that fought in the army was that if they fought successfully for some 20 years, well, then they would be given land and a place and a stipend that they could retire on. And so there was a lot of retired Roman military personnel there. And as Paul got there, he felt the need to bring Christ to these people. So he gathered them together in community, and they began to worship. And once Paul had founded a church, he didn't abandon it. True, he did go out and found other churches, but he always looked in on, he always took seriously the notion of being the shepherd to that community. And so Paul would write letters. This, in fact, especially the fourth chapter, was really a thank you note, because Paul had been good to this church, and they, in turn, had been good to him. They took up an offering and sent him money to support his ministries, his travels. And so Paul was writing a thank you note. And during this thank you, in the text of this thank you, he goes on to say, rejoice. Again, I tell you, rejoice. Paul relentlessly talks about rejoicing. And not only does he tell others to do it, but he walks the talk by embodying the notion of rejoicing. How do I know that? How do we know that? Well, he wrote this letter from prison. Let me say that again. He wrote it from prison, an ancient prison, which I've got to think was not very comfortable. He probably was sitting down on a stone-cold floor, grateful that they had provided him with pen and paper so he could write the letter in the first place. But there Paul is, imprisoned. We would understand if he said, help! My life is miserable. My ministry has come to an end. I never foresaw this happening to myself. But instead, Paul has an astounding witness. Rejoice. Rejoice. Not always because things are going well. Many times, in spite of the fact that they are not. So what do we make of this as we begin the new calendar year? Well, let's talk about resolutions. Resolutions have to do with the what we want to see, the outcomes, the expectations we have for the new calendar year, what we want to make happen, what our goals would be, and that's reasonable. We have to make sure that they're not fantasy wishes, especially as we go into this new year, still constrained by the pandemic. So I would counsel, let's do away with extreme ambitions. You know, let's not talk about becoming a Pulitzer Prize-winning chemist if you don't know anything about chemistry, or having an amazing blog with a million followers, you know. We seem to set ourselves up for failure when we do that. So if you've got the continuum, and on one end you've got, I'm doing amazing, totally transforming my life, I want to be a better Christian, I'm going to be in two different Bible studies, and I will pray five times a day. That's exactly what I will do. Only to see that not come to fruition. Why don't we move towards the other end of the continuum? The extreme would be to do no change at all, have zero expectations, and then maybe just venture just a little bit out from that, and what I call more or less. Just nuance, just a recalibration. If you ever saw the movie What About Bob, in the words of Dr. Leo Marvin, baby steps. Let's take some baby steps and just try to do a little bit better. Let's try to do a little bit more of the things that, in the words of Paul, edify and build up, a little bit less of that which tears down. So I'll give you an example. My wife, Sydney, drinks a lot of water, and I don't. And I read all these articles that say that drinking water is really good for you. People who drink water tend to be happier. And so I'm going to resolve that I'm going to try to drink more water. And I can do a twofer. I went to a Mexican food restaurant last week, and the waiter saw me, and we always go to the same place after we play golf. And he goes, "The usual Diet Coke?" And I started to say yes, and instead I went, "No, let's just go with water this time." And so I'm going to do a little more drinking of water and a little less drinking of soft drinks. Well, that's a small one, but that's easy. But we can celebrate that. Folks, let's be honest, we need a win. We need a win. We need to be able to demonstrate that our will can make some difference. Human will is important. But it seems that this past year, so much of what we wanted to do, what we had planned to do, did not come to fruition. Had nothing to do with us. It was totally external circumstance that simply said, no, can't do it. Let me tell you why that's not going to happen. And it's hard. It's discouraging. A second thing, we said, it'd be nice to get the vaccine, wouldn't it? I don't know how you feel. Maybe you've got some reservations. You don't want to be on the front lines of the people receiving it. I don't know. But at some point, between the availability of it and your willingness to take it, it seems to me, as a society, we've got a very vested interest in receiving this vaccine that's going to help liberate us from the constraints of this terrible pandemic. So we can put that on the list, get the vaccine. And then in terms of our prayer life, I do think sometimes we go overboard and we want to be a zealot. Yes, five times a day, I'm going to do that. And then it doesn't happen. So how about this? In addition to the weekly pastoral prayer, Reverend Rob offered the prayers of the people, the pastoral prayer. That's the prayers of the people. She's representing you in sharing that prayer. So you've got one for the week. How about you add one more, and you set aside one, maybe 1 hour, maybe 30 minutes a week, in which you would sit down and ask yourself, what are my blessings? Take inventory of your blessings, and then ask yourself, what's going on with me? What are my concerns? Where am I hurting? And then go to God in prayer. Praise and petition and intercession. Going to God with your concerns and your praise. If you did that 52 times a year, that'd be pretty good, wouldn't it? That'd be a nice improvement. Could you settle for that? Let's do that and maybe make it a reality. As far as less, things in the less column, seems to me we can spend less gadget time. Apparently, you know, the tech people at the church looked at my phone, you know, and I was re-waxing the string that helped, you know, improve the connection of my phone reception. And they said, you know, you need an update. That's really antiquated. So I've got this new phone, and I'm having to relearn all the applications and everything. But apparently there's an application that will tell you how much time you spent on the iPhone. And the one time I looked at it, I was surprised. That much? Oh, my gosh. That's a lot of time. Maybe I could spend less time. It's a time gobbler, these gadgets. So maybe a little less of that. Maybe a little less of a bad diet. Putting the things in our bodies, liquid or solid, that do not edify and build up but are bad for us. And then the one other thing we could probably use a little less of would be conflict. Now I know what you're thinking. You're saying, preacher, we don't choose conflict. It just finds its way to us. And that's many times that's true. Somebody runs into you at a red light. There's not much you can do about that. You got to deal with it. But I would submit to you that there's other conflicts that come your way that we choose to take on. You know, it may be an adult child that comes by and shares, you know, that this is going on in their life. And somehow, in assuming the parental mantle, we go, well, let me tell you what you need to do, or I'm going to start worrying about that. It's almost like there's a little bureaucrat sitting at a desk in our brain that for one nanosecond is sitting there, and they've got a stamp, and the stamp goes, accept it. I accept this conflict and I'm going to take it on. What if we taught that bureaucrat to set that stamp aside and had another one that said rejected? Mercifully, it's not my problem. And I will pray for you and I will root for you, but I also have confidence that I have raised you to be an autonomous, capable individual, and I look forward to seeing how you're going to solve that problem. Or else you're driving on Central Expressway and somebody cuts you off, and there's a part of you, that, especially if I don't hate to be stereotypical, but the alpha males in the congregation, you know, we are, that is not acceptable. You violated my space, and I'm gonna yell at you. I'm gonna go after you. I'm gonna scream at you. I'm gonna engage in hand gestures or whatever. Why would we do that? I mean, Sydney and I just watched a movie, Unhinged, with Russell Crowe. You watch that movie and go, Russell needs a paycheck that he would even be in this thing. But he plays this truck driver who's had a bad week. His life is falling apart. And a woman behind him is in a hurry. She's getting on with her life. The light goes green. He doesn't notice it. So she honks. He takes pains to tell her at the next intersection. She could have given him a courtesy tap, just a little beep. Lights turn green. You might want to go ahead. No, she didn't do that. She leaned on the horn in an expression of anger in the vernacular of traffic and drivers, and so it made him angry, and so, of course, he had just no other choice but to harass and intimidate her. Lesson to the story, don't take on crazy. We're all stocked up. Don't go out and solicit more crazy. You don't know who you're dealing with. So, that's just some examples, very small, nuanced things where you might improve your life in 2021. Those are what things. And of course, with the pandemic, we don't have total control over the what. But now I want to talk to you about a different aspect to your life in 2021, what I would call the how things. You see, psychotherapists talk about cognitive reframing. They say that they ask the question, how much of your pain is from what is happening, and how much of it is from your way of thinking about it? How much is from what's really going on, and how much is from the way that you're thinking about it? Sometimes we have a total lack of proportion. Yes, this is a problem, but also it's not that big a deal. Why are we making a big thing about it? Nature abhors a vacuum, and if you don't have a lot going on in your life, you have a tendency, there is the temptation to fill it with these tiny, petty, mundane problems and to be miserable. Consequently, we're admonished to focus on the right things. I think that's what Paul is saying. There he is in prison, and he's saying, rejoice. My favorite story of reframing, you might call it cognitive reframing, has to do with a Christian missionary couple in China. And they were there in the 50s. They'd been assigned to a small village. They'd spent like 15 years there. They loved the people and the people loved them. Their three children had been born in that village. They could speak Chinese. They had formed a church there. They had a vital life going on. They wanted to spend the remainder of their ministry there in this small village in China, but the communists took over and announced that all foreign religious people would be expelled. And the local army, a military unit, came to them and informed them they had 1 week to get ready. They would have a plane and they would fly them out of China, and they needed to pack up, and they'd better be on that plane, and they allowed them 300 pounds of freight. No more than 300 pounds of freight. Well, not only were the couple in shock and they were grieving, but also now they're disagreeing with each other because the husband wanted his entire theological library to go with him. It was all written in Chinese. He wanted all of that. She wanted her collection of ornate plates and dishes to go as well. Plus, they had to have some of the kids' toys. So after much disagreement and conflict, they finally compromised and had this package. It was all packed up there. The toys and the plates and the combination of plates and books were all there together. The day they were supposed to leave, And the angry soldier came to them and looked at them and scowled. And he looked at the luggage and he said, "Too much. That's too much." And they said, No. We've waited. It comes out under the guidelines." And the soldier asked him a question that clarified everything. He said, "Have you weighed the children?" And with that question, suddenly the value and the importance of the plates and the books, they didn't mean a thing compared to the importance and the significance of their children in their life. It reframed reality and reminding them of what's really important. As we go into 2021, why don't we embrace that question? What's going on? What's important? And then what's really important? Let's step back and get a little perspective, a little sense of proportion, and ask the question, what's really important? You see, Paul tells us to focus on what is true, what is honorable, what is just, what is pure, what is pleasing, and what is commendable. Focus on those things. We are not the passive recipients of circumstance. You ask yourself the question, are you happy? Well, let me see if everything's going right in my life. Well, if we're only happy when everything's going right in our lives, how often is that going to be? But if we can focus, Paul was focused on Christ. He was lifted up each and every day. You know, a great example of focusing was Ben Hogan, the golfer. Hogan was, he just concentrated on his golf game. He was so good at that. In fact, there was a story in the 1947 Masters golf tournament. He was paired with Claude Harmon. They're on a par three. Hogan gets up and he hits his shot. It's on the green. It's about 10 feet from the hole. He steps back. He's trying to strategize on how he's going to do. He and Harmon walk down to the green. Hogan steps over the ball and sinks the putt for a birdie. He's walking off. They're walking to the next hole. He turns to Claude and he goes, "Claude, what did you make on that hole?" And kind of in an embarrassed fashion, Harmon goes, "Ben, I made a hole in one." And Hogan didn't even notice. Now we might say, well, that's kind of narcissistic. But he was just laser focused on what was important to him. You know, our bodies may be distanced, but it doesn't mean that our hearts can't be together. Our faces may be covered, but it doesn't mean that our eyes can't twinkle with joy. Our hands may have to be sanitized, but it doesn't mean we can't do the work of the church and do good on behalf of Christ. The word rejoice appears 16 times in the letter to the Philippians. We are called to rejoice, to be chronically down and discouraged is to not believe. You know, we had so much going on with the pandemic. My gosh, the building was closed for a long time. We're worshiping and we're singing under these incredible constraints. Susanna Miller took the job as interim choir director. It would be understandable if she just said, "Well, you know, let's just do a couple of congregational hymns and we'll knock out one anthem a week. You know, can't really expect much more than that." For some inexplicable reason, our music people decided for the season of Advent that they would put on a service of lessons and carols, knowing that it would have to be taped over a period of 3 weeks. It would have to be done under extraordinarily difficult conditions, taping of different configurations of personnel that would all be put together. For some reason, they took that task on. And it concluded in this amazing video presentation of the service of lessons and carols. And we were even able to turn to that video and let it be our fourth Sunday of Advent service. And it was really inspiring. Susanna, it was terrific, the leadership. You know, and I shared with a number of folks, gee, that's why we got into ministry in the first place, isn't it? The potential the possibility of doing something extraordinary that just inspires people, that just lifts people up in an amazing fashion. In spite of all the hardship and the difficulty and the irritating things that don't always go right, we have the opportunity to link people together to edify and lift them up. You see, I think church is really an exercise in forming human chains, linking people together. That's what Paul was doing. He went to Philippi, looked around, and said, "You folks need some community. You folks need Christ." And he created a collective force. This past week, we had an example of the power of a human chain in a scene right out of It's a Wonderful Life in Middletown, New Jersey. There were two children, Olivia, who was 8, and her little brother, RJ, who was 4. They were sledding. They lived right across the street from a country club. There was snow on the grounds. They went across the street. They're sledding over these hills, these moguls. But their momentum took them over a hill, and they're careening towards an icy pond. Nothing could stop them, and they went right into the water. Fortunately for them, there were 5 boys who were nearby teenagers. They all were Boy Scouts. Without any hesitation whatsoever, they ran towards that icy pond, and one of them jumped in. And then the other 4, they formed a human chain, making sure that they would be able to get solid ground, and they're holding on to each other, and they lifted those 2 children out to safety, and then they pulled their friend back out of the icy water. Amazing. Not one of those boys could have saved those kids by himself, but together, in a human chain, they were able to accomplish a heroic rescue. You see, I think church is a lot like that. Individually, isolated, alone, questioning ourselves, there's not a lot we can really do. But united, linked together, we can save one another from danger. We can inspire one another, and we can accomplish much, especially at this great church, the people of God known as Highland Park United Methodist Church. Right now, we're not comfortable in all gathering together, and so we're in mourning. We grieve that. But the time will come when that will change. And I don't think we can take for granted when we ring the dinner bell that everybody's just going to reflexively come, passively return. We've got to be proactive. It's a decision that we will need to make. And so I make that appeal to you. Don't give up. Hang on. We're linked together right now through the streaming video, but hang on. The church is still vibrant. The church is alive. The mission is going on. We've seen the number of meals that we provided through the pandemic to people in need, and we will continue to do that. If we will focus on what's important, if we will focus on the things that edify, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and anything worthy of praise, think about these things. In the name of Christ Jesus, amen.